This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. One day after his visit to Britain, U.S. President Donald Trump and First Lady Melania Trump got the royal treatment from Queen Elizabeth, including a state banquet. Before leaving, though, the president has said that he thinks the United States and Britain have an opportunity to work out a very big trade deal in the near future. But this comes while Britain is in political turmoil and Prime Minister Theresa May prepares to resign in just a few days. As VOA's Patsy Wadukaskawar explains, this, coupled with comments by the president, could make talks about this awkward.
Trump is backing Boris Johnson as Britain's next prime minister. Britain seemed to have mixed feelings about Trump's remarks.
Well, personally, I view Boris Johnson as a little bit of a muppet. So I understand why Trump likes someone like Boris Johnson.
So I don't think it's a problem with him commenting about what's going on, and we probably should get our act together, but it's absolutely fine.
I just think he's a breath of fresh air against politicians who generally are asked a question and never give an answer.
Still, Trump's remarks have unsettled the carefully calibrated pageantry, including his insult of London Mayor Sadiq Khan, whom he called a stone-cold loser. Khan hit back with an editorial describing Trump as a global threat. Patsy Wadukaskawar, VOA News, London.
United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres has condemned a Monday attack by Sudanese security forces that broke up a protest site in Khartoum and killed or wounded dozens of people. Explosions and heavy machine gun fire were heard as security forces stormed a site outside the defense ministry where demonstrators had maintained a protest for the past 8 weeks demanding the military hand power over to a civilian authority. Witnesses say that by mid-afternoon, the area had been cleared. More at VOAnews.com. This is VOA News. Russia has informed the U.S. that it has pulled most of its military personnel out of Venezuela. That's according to U.S. President Donald Trump. The Moscow action is a setback for Venezuela's socialist president, Nicolas Maduro. He has clung to power with the support of Russia and China, but more than 50 countries, including the U.S., have recognized National Assembly President Juan Guaido as Venezuela's legitimate leader. Russia's state defense contractor, Rostec, which had trained Venezuelan troops and advised on security arms contracts, has sharply cut its staff in Venezuela from about 1,000 personnel a few years ago at the height of cooperation between Moscow and Caracas to a few dozen. Mexico warned Monday that President Donald Trump's threatened a new tariff on its exports to the United States would hurt both countries and cause even more Central American migrants to travel through Mexico to reach the United States. At the start of talks in Washington, Mexico officials said that they could only go as far as meeting Mr. Trump's demands to block migrants, but so far, saying that passage through Mexico to avert Trump's imposition of a 5% tariff next week, that the official specifically ruled out the third safe country agreement requiring U.S. asylum seekers to first apply for refuge in Mexico. At a news conference, Mexico's ambassador to the U.S., Martha Barcena, said that new U.S. tariffs would undermine Mexico's efforts to manage the flow of migrants.
Tariffs could cause financial and economic instability, which means that Mexico could reduce its capacity to address migration flows and to offer alternatives to the new migrants who have recently arrived in Mexico.
Before leaving for a state visit in Britain, Mr. Trump, who earlier this year threatened to close the U.S.-Mexico border, goaded Mexico for a quick resolution to the latest snag between the neighboring countries. The U.S. House has passed a long-delayed $19 billion disaster aid bill, which includes money for Puerto Rico, but not for border detentions. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn.
The yeas are 354. The nays are 58.
President Trump is expected to sign the disaster aid bill into law after months of delays and a standoff with Democrats. It's aimed at helping communities around the country bounce back from hurricanes, floods, tornadoes, and fires. But the president wanted $4 billion for detaining migrants at the border and opposes additional aid for Puerto Rico. And three times, conservative Republicans blocked a vote objecting on procedural grounds. But now, with lawmakers back from a 10-day recess, the House has passed the bill, which the Senate approved last month. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to The Break Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The United Nations condemned the killing of protesters by Sudanese military.
The casualties came after gunfire erupted early Monday morning in Khartoum, as protesters say security forces attempted to clear their almost two-month sit-in around military headquarters.
That's reporter Faith Lapidus reporting for Namba Muhideen. A new report says illegal land grabs remain a problem in South Sudan. There's a peace gesture in Sierra Leone following last week's clashes between police and supporters of the opposition APC. A Guinean opposition leader has again said President Conde is planning to seek an illegal third term. And human rights groups in Zimbabwe are concerned about government crackdown on activists.
In the Mugabe era, we were moved under a police state, but now we're under a military state. Even you check the charges, they're being accused of being trained in small arms. That's military intelligence operation.
And that's Komobero Zuveshi, a human rights activist. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sudanese protesters say at least 35 people were killed Monday after security forces took over the main protest camp in the capital Khartoum in the worst violence since the overthrow of President Omar al-Bashir. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres has condemned the attack. Namah Muhideen filed this report as narrated by Faith Lapidus.
The casualties came after gunfire erupted early Monday morning in Khartoum, as protesters say security forces attempted to clear their almost two-month sit-in around military headquarters. The Sudanese Professionals Association, the main protest group, accused the military of staging a coup against them and vowed more protests and nationwide strikes. Protester Mohamed Abbas is a member of the SPA. This is a massacre executed by the military council, he says. They lost their patience after 53 days, says Abbas, showing that it's a coup. This is a massacre executed by the transitional military council with planning from the camps opposing the nation's revolution, he says. Protester Abu Anas witnessed the attack. A big group from the Rapid Support Forces attacked us in the sit-in area, he says. They then surrounded the army headquarters buildings and gates. There was no army, says Abu. We were attacked by a huge force with live ammunition. There were many casualties. We moved to the borough area now and we're surrounded, he says. Thousands of protesters responded Monday by blocking roads and burning tires in parts of the capital. Sudan's transitional military council was set up in April after the army overthrew longtime President Omar al-Bashir. The council has agreed in principle to share power with civilians, but talks on forming a transitional government have stalled. The TMC said the raid on the protest camp targeted criminal elements near the protest site and that the protesters themselves were safe. Shams Eldin Kabashi is a spokesman for the TMC. He says the area next to the protesters' sit-in, in front of the army headquarters, is well known as a focus for many negative attitudes. They threaten the safety and security of Khartoum citizens, he says. Despite the violence, the TMC said ongoing talks between the military and protest leaders on a transitional government were expected to continue later Monday or Tuesday. But Sudan's opposition and protest groups denied talks were possible after the violence. In a statement, they said they were halting all contact and negotiations with the military. The raid on the protest camp was not unexpected. A military statement last Thursday had called the sit-in a threat to national security. The United States Embassy in Khartoum on Monday condemned the violence. In a tweet, the embassy said Sudanese security forces' attacks against protesters and other civilians is wrong and must stop. Responsibility, it read, falls on the Transitional Military Council. For Naba Mohideen, in Khartoum, Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
A new report by Safer World and the Organization for Nonviolence and Development, known as ONA, says illegal land grabs remain a big problem in South Sudan. The Jubek State Land Commissioner says his office will take illegal action against land grabbers. Winnie Sirino reports from Juba.
39-year-old James Duku says he has been tracking a court case in which a former government official grabbed his aunt's plot of land in Juba's Taungping suburb, also known as Juba Nabari, 2 years ago. Duku says his aunt was living on another plot of land and wanted to sell the Taungping plot. He says when he secured a client for his aunt to buy the land and escorted the potential buyer to the plot, he discovered that strangers were living on the land. Duku says after failing to resolve the issue with the occupants, he filed a court case.
That land was grabbed by a former minister of the government. We went to court. The process is ongoing. We have the hope that maybe the court will rule the case in favor of my aunt because we have the original papers, whereas the defendant has a paper that has been forged. We don't know from where. So we are waiting for the judgment.
Duku claims that like the former minister, whom he declined to identify for fear of reprisals from government officials, either on him or his aunt, many officials have grabbed land illegally because judicial officers are corrupt. He alleges that land grabbers often bribe judges to rule in their favor, even when landowners have documents proving they are the rightful owners.
Sometimes you go up to housing and you see the name there does not represent the name with the forged document that the other party has. But then you see the judgment going for the defendant. You get confused. So I am asking that let the government intervene and try to correct the judicial system because we don't know what is happening, but it seems to me that judges sometimes are being played with.
Phoebe Manza is the project coordinator for Safer World. Manza says South Sudan has no national land policies of its own, but uses the statutory laws of Sudan. However, she says the laws contradict each other and conflict with customary laws on land use. And Manza confirms that many people use their positions in government to grab land.
Public institutions are quite ineffective due to abuse of power by public officials and employment of unqualified staff in some departments. Meanwhile, citizens also do not consistently follow established procedure for land acquisition. They influence government officials to use unlawful procedure to allot and sell plots.
Manza says the discrepancies create gaps in the government's response to land disputes. Andrew Wani, chairperson of the Jubek State Land Commission, acknowledges that many people have filed complaints of land grabs by government officials and other individuals. ECEC is working with the commissioners to ensure that land sold illegally is returned to the rightful owners. Kose warns that any former or current official who sells plots of land illegally will be prosecuted. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Human rights organizations in Zimbabwe say they are concerned about what they call a crackdown on opposition activists by the government of President Emmerson Mnangagwa. They cite the recent arrest of 7 activists who were detained when they returned home from a conference in the Maldives. As Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, rights groups fear the Mnangagwa government is adopting the same repressive tactics used by his predecessor, Robert Mugabe.
Makomborero Haruziveshe leaves Zimbabwe's maximum security prison where he was visiting the 7 detained activists who are being held on treason charges. He is a family friend of one of them, 37-year-old Tatenda Mumbeyarara.
It's a baseless charge. It's just a charge which they are using to justify the crackdown on human rights defenders and civil society. But the reality on the ground is the economy, it's in tatters. Timbers within the country are high. So the government now, in order to throw fear, to intimidate the people, into pacify them, the opposition people, they are going for leading civil society organizations and top human rights defenders in order to, one, to pacify them in case of any planned peaceful mass action.
On Monday, Zimbabwe's Justice Minister Ziyambi Ziyambe told VOA that he would not comment on the 7 activists as their case was now in court. The seven were arrested last month on arrival at Harare International Airport on their return from attending a workshop in the Maldives. The government says the workshop taught them tactics to overthrow President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government, an offense which carries a sentence of up to 20 years in prison in Zimbabwe. Aruzivese says nothing much has changed since Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe's regime ended in 2017.
The change is there, but it's for the worse, to be honest. In the Mugabe era, we were more under a police state, but now we're under a military state. Even you check the charges, they're being accused of being trained in small arms. That's military intelligence operation, where you will give people a military-linked charges so that you can deal with them in a military manner.
Kumbirai Mafunda from the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights is hopeful that the High Court will release the activists on bail later this week.
We believe, like I've indicated, that these people did not commit any crime or any offense according to Zimbabwe's law. They enjoy several of their fundamental rights, and we believe that this is just one case of the several cases which we have seen a couple of years of the government going down on the work of civil society.
Arresting opposition activists was a common tactic used by Mugabe during his 38 years in power. Human rights groups want to see the charges against the seven activists now in jail dropped. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 4th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 16 and a half minutes past the hour. Two prominent Sierra Leonean opposition leaders say they plan to meet with government officials this week as part of a peace effort to resolve growing political tension in the country. Former presidential candidate Kande Kole Yomkela of the National Grand Coalition Party and Femi Claudia Cole, leader of the opposition Unity Party, met with officials of the main opposition All People's Congress APC party following clashes last week between the police and APC supporters. Femi Claudius Cole spoke with viewers Peter Clotty.
We took it upon ourselves that, look, we can't just sit by and say we believe in this and we do nothing. So we went to the APC office, met with the Secretary General, we spoke to him that in the spirit of all that we have spoken about, we have come to see what is going on. We don't want to get it from social media. We want to actually speak with them. And we did, and we had the account of what had happened from their perspective. And we appealed to them to talk to their supporters for them to calm down, for them not to escalate the situation, because it could then go into a tit-for-tat situation where they can then go and attack, you know what I mean, for it to stop, for them to really calm their supporters down and appeal to them that the only way forward is going to have to be dialogue. And our visit was not only to them. We then went to the Inspector General of Police to talk to him, but he wasn't in his office. And then we went to the CID.
Reports I'm hearing from Sierra Leone suggest that there is still tension in the capital, Freetown, and other parts of the country, and that the reaction towards your peace initiative appears to be lukewarm. Are you bothered by such sentiment or reports coming from Sierra Leone?
The country seems essentially calm on the surface, but there are definitely tensions brewing underneath. And it appears as if the country is now split on political lines. And by such, the APC supporters feel very hard done by. And the SNPP supporters seem very unsympathetic. And the tone is basically, this is our turn. When you were doing it to us, and now it's happening to you. So it's a very much tit-for-tat situation, which has the potential to escalate.
The APC keeps on saying that members of top members of the party who were former government officials are being persecuted by the government. The government, on the other hand, says that, well, it is fighting against corruption because it promised Sierra Leoneans that it will fight corruption and root it out. How do you reconcile these two?
I think there's no way Sierra Leone can move forward with the level of corruption and the level of impunity that has almost become synonymous with our country. And I actually applaud the government's efforts in fighting corruption and should be fought in a very transparent way and manner. I don't know whether the opposition is referring to the Commission of Inquiry. And let the Commission of Inquiry run its course. It is necessary. People had enjoyed a level of corruption with impunity in Sierra Leone, which quite frankly cannot and should not continue. I mean, both sides have their lawyers. If somebody is being victimized, there should evidence that there are judges, that some of them are foreign judges who are sitting on the Commission of Inquiry, and a lot of the commission is actually on live TV. Some of it is on audio. For those who care to follow, you can follow and see, are there areas where people are being railroaded? Are there areas where people are being falsely accused? The process of the Commission of Inquiry, to all intents and purposes, should go on. Those who have been falsely accused have defended themselves and will be exonerated. I don't think the country should go into a state of instability because of the Commission of Inquiry.
Femi Claudius Cole is leader of Sierra Leone's opposition Unity Party. She spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Freetown. Kenyan opposition leader Faya Milimuno has again said President Alpha Conde is intentionally refusing to hold parliamentary elections as a pretext to have a third term after his current second and constitutionally mandated term ends in 2020. This time around, Milimuno says some opposition members of parliament may be complicit in the president's alleged plan to have a third term. Kenyan Information Minister Amara Sampare told VOA last month that President Conde is not plotting to stay in power beyond his current second and final term. But Milimuno says President Conde's plan is to let the current parliament's term expire without having election. If that happens, he says, the president will also stay on in office.
We are going to 2020. That's going to be the end of the second term of the current president, because according to the constitution, no president should have more than two terms. But the debate over there right now, at least on the president's side, is to find all the ideas how to convince Guineans that he deserves a third term, even a fourth term. It's been a problem because also the term of the parliament has expired since February 2019. And the president has extended, which is anti-constitutional, the term of the parliament. It was because my political party was protesting against that we were arrested.
I did speak with the Guinean Minister of Information. He says that Guinea has an independent electoral commission, and it is the independent electoral commission that makes the decision when to have election.
According to the constitution, it is the obligation for the president to make sure all the institutions work properly. And for that to happen, he has to do certain things for those institutions to work properly. The Electoral Commission doesn't find money by itself. It is the government, therefore the president, to make sure the Electoral Commission has the necessary means to organize elections. The president was preparing by doing that the Plan B. Plan B is, since he want to have a third term, and the constitution doesn't allow him to have a third term, he just want to have a third term because there is no election. Just like it happened in Congo. The plan B is start by letting the parliament term expire. If they stay, so he's gonna stay himself. When in 2020, there is no election. That's what is happening there.
What happened to the rest of the opposition? Are they with you in this fight to push for the election?
When I listen to people from what they're saying publicly, it looks like they are with me. They're fighting for the same thing, for the president not to have the third term, for the parliament to be renewed. But when you look at their actions, it seems to be different from what they're saying. Some of those opposition leaders have many of their members in that expired parliament. And they know that it is anti-constitutional, but still, they are there helping Alpha to have the plan B.
Faye Milimuno is the leader of the Liberal Bloc Party of Guinea. He spoke with me during his recent visit to Washington, D.C. Senegalese biologist and conservationist Thomas Diani has been nominated for a prestigious Tusk Conservation in Africa Award for his work with turtles and tortoises in Senegal. Diani spoke to Ricky Stryak about his work and what he would do with the prize money if he wins the award.
I think as a part of a component of biodiversity, turtles are just some kind of... You have so many different type of species in Senegal. The diversity is really high, and we need to conserve biodiversity, and turtle is part of the biodiversity for the next generation and for the current generation.
What are some of the threats posed to tortoises?
Most of the threat right now, habitat loss is the first. And after habitat loss, because, you know, rapidly the population growth in Africa is just so rapid. But worldwide, the population growth is the main threat of wildlife, because the more you have human, the more resources, the natural resources is going to be taken. And wild habitat is not around anymore. Suitable white habitat for wildlife. The second level is bush meat. Not most of the turtle are considered animal edible for eating. Like in the country where people are poor, they don't have a lot of supply about finding protein in other sources, and they use bush meat, what we name bush meat here, in order to get some meat and some protein. And turtle eaten.
How do you then save the turtles but make sure that people get the protein they need, people in this precarious position?
Yeah, always in our project we are trying to promote sustainable livelihood in order to say, okay, well, because most of the case they say, okay, we cut turtle accidentally and they are in the really bad shape and we decided to eat it and we are not going to save it, and because they are already almost dead. And we come to these people, like in our community-based project in Lac de Guerre, we come to these people and we say, hey, you say turtle is not your target, you are setting your net for fish, but when you caught accidentally a turtle, you eat it. And how about doing together something who can turtle can be still around and you can get benefit by ecotourism for the turtle and other stuff too.
And what will you do with the Tusk Award money if you win the Tusk Award?
I want to use the money for the Tusk Award, first of all, doing more field survey in the place where we have lack of funding, and we wanted to just do field survey in order to promote turtle conservation. I see the area of Cote d'Ivoire, I see the area of central Senegal where we are implementing our project for the land tortoise. Part of also the Tusk Award will be used to breeding facility we have here. We just started to build really the library to have dormitory for visiting scientists and all these things.
That was Thomas Diani, a Senegalese biologist and conservationist who has been nominated for the Tusk Conservation in Africa Award. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres has condemned a Monday attack by Sudanese security forces that broke up a protest site in Khartoum and killed or wounded dozens of people. A spokesman says the Secretary General condemns the use of force to disperse the protesters at the site, and he is alarmed by reports that security forces have opened fire inside medical facilities. That is it for this Tuesday, June 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you a good day.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour. Oh. Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on the Voice of America.